Blog Talk Radio.
JH Experience with co-host Dolly Miller Brennan.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.
And now your host, the notorious MJH.
Talk Radio Land and any place else on the web where this may be being broadcast or repodcasted or however. Hey, how was everybody's holidays? Yeah, it's, wow, it kind of went by so quick, you know, Christmas and everything and New Year's and, man, it's like, you know, I woke up like scratching my head this morning going, wait a minute, New Year's? Oh, yeah, we already did that. So, yeah, we're all trying to get back on schedule. So, yeah, tonight we have our co-host, Dolly Miller Brennan, and our author, theory conspiratorialist, authority here, Larry Ballard. He's going to be talking to us about, I'm going to let him, or him and Dolly actually get into that. It's because I really, it's kind of over my head. Okay, you guys have listened to the show regularly. You kind of picked up on the fact that I'm kind of like the technical guy, and some of these things that they talk about on the show, they're like really above my head, and that's how I learn. So I'm learning by listening to them with you guys. So actually, nobody's really prepared tonight, so we're just going to kind of wing it, but we really do have a good topic. And Dolly, how have you been? How were your holidays?
I've been doing really good. I've been doing really good. I'm sitting watching here. Somebody pull into my parking space. So I'm going to have to go down and leave a nasty note on each door.
Throw an egg at him. Huh? You know, I was sitting home the other day, and I had no business being home that time of day, but I happened to catch Boss Ross, the America's Court Judge. And that guy, he seemed obnoxious on the commercial, but he's actually pretty funny. And this woman took another woman to court because she kept taking her parking spot.
Well, this is it. I'm sorry, you know, but I pay for that, and I don't expect to give it away for free.
This lady, she lived in the complex. She bought a third parking spot from the complex, and her colleague, this other female that she had some kind of fling with in college, she moved to the same apartment complex across the hall from her and kept taking her parking space. And she actually, the lady who sued she didn't get the money from the lady because she was married and her husband told her it was okay to park there. And whatever state they were in, it was community property. So she actually got away with it. But they did tow her car and she said she wasn't going to park there no more.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm getting really pissed off here. I can be a real bitch.
So, Larry, how are you doing, sir? How was your holidays?
Very good. Very good.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
And, Mark, I don't think anything's above your head. I think you just sit back and listen.
Some things they really are, and that's how I learn. I've learned a lot since we've been doing these shows with Cass and Reverend Rife and Larry here. I've actually learned a lot of stuff I didn't know, and what once was really over my head, I actually have more of a grasp on now. But a lot of things that went on in history and current events and the hidden agendas, that kind of stuff. You know, I've heard of it. You know, with what's that guy's name? Alex Jones. You know, we've talked about him before, and it's like, you know, the guy's always crying wolf. If he ever does have anything real to talk about, nobody's going to listen to him, you know. I done booted him from my Twitter. YouTube banned his account, you know. I mean, Come on, dude.
Well, I don't know. They may ban me on Twitter today. I tweeted something. I took it from Fox, where Obama has removed on the passport mother and father, parent number one and parent number two. So I shared it, and I tweeted that Obama was the most disgusting creature to ever inhabit the United States.
I don't think it goes over your head. I think you're just like a lot of other Americans. We have a lot on our plate, and there's only so many things you can be knowledgeable on and up on, and I think some of these topics are very specific topics, and you're just not informed. And so you're becoming more informed, which is what we're trying to do with the show, which is inform America.
Exactly. Well, now, Larry, Mike had told me we were talking. I'll get this guy's license number. Mike told me you were talking about in 1933 about how the U.S. declared bankruptcy. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it's written into the congressional record of the United States of America, and yet it's something that almost no Americans know because they rewrite history. They after a few years or a decade or two, it's gone. It's just basically gone. And so I wanted people to understand what Obama's doing, what the previous president did, what's happening. And I thought, well, one way to get them to really understand is to go back, all the way back to 1933, and talk about one of the most pinnacle events in U.S. history that nobody knows about, and let them know that it is really what laid the foundation for the bankrupting of America now. And so basically that's what I wanted to talk about. Basically they I'll read you a little bit of the transcript from Congress in just a second. But basically what it did is it declared that they were pulling the gold, declaring bankruptcy, and as a result of that negated the legitimacy of the government of the United States. And I'll read you the transcript in a minute. It basically says that at that point that control of the United States of America went over to its receivers, and in this instance it was the IMF and the Federal Reserve, and that Federal Reserve officers were to act as agents of the Treasury. And from that point forward, basically, we were owned by the Fed. And it went on to say, and maybe I should read this part, it's a long document, I'll see if I can get down to the meat of it. I'll read you a couple little paragraphs. It is an established fact that the United States federal government has been dissolved by the Emergency Banking Act, March 9, 1933. We skip on down. Joint resolution to suspend the gold standard and aggregate the gold clause dissolved the sovereign authority of the United States and the official capacities of the United States government officers and departments, and is further evidence that the United States government exists in name only. And then I'll skip down some more, and I'll just give you kind of the meat here. It is the really, really important part. So basically our government was dissolved, and it says in the congressional record, this new form of government is known as a democracy. Remember, before we were a republic, and a republic is based upon the Constitution. A democracy is based upon majority rule. And our founding fathers used to fondly call a democracy a mobocracy because they said it led to mob rule. But anyway, I'll go on. It says this new form of government is known as a democracy, being an established, now listen to this, socialist communist order under a new governor for America. And then it goes on to say that the Federal Reserve is our receiver, and that agents of the Federal Reserve are to act as Treasury agents. And then that gets into how basically all of our gold was pulled in. But let me stop and see if you have any questions, because that's really the core of this message, and I don't want to go too far into it unless you feel comfortable with what I've read just so far.
What exactly was that you were just reading from?
That's from the Congressional Record of the United States of America. If you go to my website, it's posted on there. It's got all kinds of footnotes, but I didn't want to get into them here. I'll read you part of it. It says, for example, the Emergency Banking Act, March 9, 1933, 48 Statute 1, Public Law 89-719, and on, it's all through the documents. All the references are there. This is an official record from the Congress of the United States signaling to that time that we were bankrupt and had become a socialist communist order, and we're no longer a republic, but we're a democracy. And if you look at that, then you can start to look at the decisions that have been coming out of Washington for the last at least 20 years. I mean, it's been going on forever, but they've gotten bolder and bolder and bolder and bolder, and you can begin to understand what they've done to us. And then if I jump forward, I've got a quote here from Greenspan, which is now, all these years later, a very strong validation of what I just read you. Greenspan was in an interview, and he was asked what the relationship was between the Federal Reserve and the President of the United States. And his response was, well, that the Fed was independent and that no agency of the United States had any control over the Fed, and therefore the relationship between the Fed and the President of the United States was, quote-unquote, inconsequential and made absolutely no difference. I can read you the quote if you want, but that basically is a further validation of the fact that, you know, this government, our Congress and our Senate, are more or less irrelevant. As a point of fact, I don't have any particulars on this because I was kind of distracted over the holidays, but I understand that over the holidays, another critical piece of legislation was pushed through without going through Congress, without going through our legislators, and now Obama has basically set the stage for taking over the Internet. Have you guys read anything on that?
Well, I've read about net neutrality. I haven't been keeping up with that issue.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Net neutrality was snuck through, and you know, I think in time that's going to become the vehicle for them to take over the Internet. But let me try to make this a little bit more specific for you if I can. Let's go to the Gold Clause. It says the Gold dissolved the sovereign authority of the United States and the official capacities of the United States government, officials and offices, et cetera, et cetera. So what happened is they forced the American people to turn their gold in, and they did it under penalty of law. They basically enacted what had been used, which was the trading with the enemy clause, and put in terminology that made it now applicable to U.S. citizens. And if you didn't turn your gold in, you could be fined up to $10,000 and you could be put in jail for up to 10 years. So now, you know, they've declared bankruptcy, they've got our assets, and then what they did from that point forward is they made us indentured servants. The first thing they did is it's a legal term, they hypothecated our assets, and let me go into what that means. And now you're probably going to want to stop me at that point and ask some questions because that's a little bit of an unusual term. Here's what they said: they said that when they took our gold, okay, they said that the money and they, what happened is the Federal Reserve now issued new currency. So the gold's been taken, new currency's been issued, and the Federal Reserve is saying the following. I'm reading again from the Congressional Record. The money will be worth 100 cents on the dollar because it is backed by the credit of the nation. It will be represented, now listen to this, by a mortgage on all the homes and other property of the people of the nation. So that's what that in legal terms, that's called hypothecation. And what that means is that they don't take your title for your house. Nothing visibly changes, so most Americans, again, are totally unaware, but let me give it to you in the real context of what that meant. Prior to 1913, prior to the enacting of the Federal Reserve Act and the Federal Reserve now in 1930 gaining complete control of our government, our real estate was owned in a form of ownership called a odial ownership, and that meant ownership in the entirety. And it meant that basically once you purchased that property and had paid for it, that it could not be taken away from you by exercise of law. And prior to 1913, there was no property tax. So now property tax was put into place. And if a person owns a home, and I did this as part of the research on my book, I have a townhouse that's paid for, and about a year and a half ago, I purposely was delinquent on paying my second installment. Here's what happened. 60 days after The bill was due. It was $3,000 and some. I received a official notification from the county assessor's office saying that my property would be put up for tax lien sale at a given date. And what happens is they then sell the lien. So in this instance, they sold a $3,000 lien. The property had cost $150,000. Now, normally, a lien works in this fashion. You've got what they call a mechanics lien. And a mechanics lien says if you owe $3,000 when you get ready to sell your property, that that amount of money will be deducted from the proceeds given to the party that it's due to, and everybody is even and square. But when the government gets involved here, because they're the mortgage holders of our property, what happens is if you don't redeem that $3,000 tax lien that was purchased at a tax sale, and I think it differs from state to state. It's a year or 2 years in most states. What happens is the person who bought that tax lien, in this instance for $3,000, becomes the official owner of your $150,000 property. So you never, ever, ever own your property. We're renters. All of America has been told that the American dream was home ownership, and what we need to understand is none of us own a home. And what's even worse is we're renters, and they can increase the rent on us anytime they want. So, for example, in one of the suburbs here in Chicago recently, up in Schaumburg, they had a near riot when the new tax bills came out because literally hundreds of people showed up at the assessor's office, spilling out in the parking lots, and the police had to be called because what had happened is thousands of people in the community were unable to sell their homes because they had dropped 30% and 40%. And yet they had a massive increase in their property taxes. And so the government can, at will, raise your property tax, which means they can raise your rent on your property. And if you're unable to pay it, the government confiscates your property. So none of us, I mean, I think this is shocking to most Americans, none of us are property owners. And that's the first thing that happened as a result of the bankruptcy of the United States. And there's others as well. But let's stop on that and see if Ollie, if you or Mike have any questions on that, you know, very, very kind of, you know, shocking piece of information.
Well, it was interesting. I was looking at this today, and I did know about the bankruptcy thing. But I noticed that in 1935, I just left the notes, in 1935, that's when the first Social Security law was enacted. Of course, at first age 65, the median age for men was 59.9, and women was 62. So,
Yep. Yes,
you're never going to live long enough to collect it. So wasn't that nice? The country was bankrupt. They pushed through a law to force it.
Dolly, you're breaking up.
Yeah, we can hardly hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me now? Oh, I think this is better
now. You're better today.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, I was looking at it today, and I knew about the bankruptcy thing, but I also looked at the Social Security law, which was enacted in 1935. Well, the median life expectancy for men was 59.9 and women 62.3. They put Social Security in at 65, so obviously you were not going to live long enough to collect it. So wasn't it nice that they put in a law to force, to deliberately take money away from you for something they knew you could never use, and they had all this money at their disposal to clear up their debts?
Well, it's even worse than you might think, Dolly. Let me go back to this one line. I want to reread it again, and then I'll tell you the four ways in which they backed the currency that the Federal Reserve was putting out in exchange for gold. So we gave them gold, which has always historically been the measure of value, and we received worthless paper. And maybe before I go on, let me give you another. There was an interview with Ron Paul, and it was on a documentary hosted by Aaron Russo. And on that documentary, they were talking about the Federal Reserve. And Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul, says basically that when the government needs money, they just tell the Fed. They say, for example, we need $20 billion. And the Fed then just goes over to a computer, enters a few keystrokes, and creates a signal to print $20 billion. There's no assets behind that. And then the American people are liable to pay the Federal Reserve interest on that counterfeit money that they created. So here's the key to this whole thing. The money will be worth 100 cents on the dollar because it is backed by what? Not by gold, by the credit of the nation. It will represent a mortgage on all the homes and other property of the people of the nation. So, Dolly, you hit it. Here are the four things that they put into place to guarantee that loan or whatever you want to call it. Inflation, and I'll tell you about that in a second. Income tax, which is, by the way, illegal. Social Security, which you hit on, and the national debt. So let's just take them kind of one at a time and talk about them. And basically what I think you'll see is that since that point in 1933, the American people lost their freedom. We became indentured servants. We lost our government. We ceased to be a republic, and we became a democracy and effectively a socialist communist society. So inflation. 1933, a dollar was worth a dollar. And just a few days ago, I went to, there's a site you can go on, an U.S. inflation calculator, and I punched in the year 1933, the year the Fed went into play. I punched in the amount of a dollar, and a dollar today, or this was about a week ago, was equivalent to $22.10 in 19, well, it was just the end of 2010, just a few days ago. And that represents, get ready for this, 2,110% inflation since 1913 to now. And for example, I took my son to the show over the holidays, and I used to be able as a child to go to the show, buy a bag of popcorn and buy a soda, and it cost me 50 cents. When I walked out of the show with my son over the holidays, a small popcorn, a medium soda, and two tickets cost me $50.50. So what used to cost 50 cents, to put this in consumer terms, cost me $50 today. So basically, one of the ways they've stolen our money is through inflation. They've made the money less worth less and less and less, and that's part of their master plan to drive us into bankruptcy. The next phase is basically the national debt. But before I get into that, let's just see if you've got any comments or questions on that, and we'll go through these 4 points one by one.
Okay. Well, in regard to the national debt, I firmly believe, and see what your thoughts are, that there is an effort. Obama wants to bankrupt the country. He wants to create financial collapse so that we can create a new Tower of Babel, a one-world government. I do believe that a financial collapse is being engineered, and it's trying to be engineered by him. I do believe John Boehner is doing what he can to help avert this. I don't know if he's strong enough.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know too much about Boehner, so I'm not going to comment on that. But it's not just Obama. Obama is what I call, in classical terms, the closer. I mean, this really started in full speed in 1913 when they got the Fed in, and then
it
really
started,
escalated.
But he is exacerbating it. He's the one
he's the closer. He's at the end. It's now to the point that things are to the point that they believe they can execute the collapse of the United States of America, and so he's in there pushing. And everything he's doing, if you really stop and look at it, there's been a systematic drive to make the American people dependent on the government. And everything he's done is designed to intentionally not only Bush basically pushed collapses by the opposing the 50 governors who wanted to pass anti-predatory lending laws, and he came in and trumped them and said, no, that's a federal issue, and 3 years later we had the financial collapse. And now we've got Obama who received that collapse from Bush, and he's managing it to make sure that we don't come out of it. So what kind of things is Obama doing? I agree with you 100%. We got cap and trade. Well, what's cap and trade going to do? If he gets through, which, by the way, if he doesn't, he'll just do another end run. And what he's already on record saying he'll do is he'll go to the Federal Trade Commission, he'll go to the EPA, and he'll use bureaucrats to pass regulations that would effectively do the same thing cap and trade would do. And as he said in his early campaign, under his plan for cap and trade, energy costs would necessarily skyrocket. So basically, he's going to drive energy costs up. And what did he do? He took advantage. His administration has said you never want to fail to take advantage of a crisis. So what did he do with the oil crisis? He basically drove the rigs out of the Gulf. And I can guarantee you that as a result of that action and inflation that's surely at our door, we're going to see oil prices not only go up, but if we look back at history, every time they try to enact a major change and drive us into bankruptcy, there's always an oil crisis. And so I believe not only in 2011, we're going to see oil prices go up to $4 or $5 a gallon, and we're also going to see oil shortages. We're going to see people lined up in lines waiting to get gasoline. And so everything they're doing is designed to collapse us. And then you've got the financial reform bill, and what's that designed to do? At a time when we need to have manufacturing and we need to create jobs, he's going to put onerous regulations on manufacturing such that the American manufacturing base can't be competitive in international markets. So we're going to drive more companies out of business through onerous regulations at a time when we ought to be doing everything we can in order to stimulate the economy. So yes, Dolly, I agree with everything you say, and inflation is being enforced on us by this. So now we've got the QE2, and when every dollar that's printed by the Fed causes the national debt to rise, I mean, the vast majority of our money now is going to pay our national debt. If I can remember the statistic I was reading just the other day, healthcare, education, and homeland security are three of our major spending components, and the interest payments on the national debt is four times larger than those three line items that we have in our budget. So you can imagine the amount of money that we're paying out to service the national debt that we've now created. And when we go back to kind of trace the real root of it, you go back to the Carter administration and the Nixon administration when they opened up the trade with China, which was the primary vehicle it used to collapse. It only had a $700 billion national debt, and now it's $14 trillion. So absolutely, you know, you're spot on. So do you have any other comments on the national debt before we start to talk about one of the other components?
Well, no, I just one brief comment. There's no way we can continue like this. We cannot continue spending money. We the entire planet cannot continue this way. You know, I mean, he is destroying the entire planet. I mean, we can't continue. We can't keep spending money.
Well, the goal is to drive us. The goal is to make us dependent on the government, so that, you know, energy costs are high. Foods basically. We're driven out, you know, food prices are going up 20%.
But the government is not going to be able to sustain us.
No, and what they're doing is they're hoping that if they can make us dependent enough on them, that we'll just sit back, and when the financial collapse comes, we'll allow them to roll us into the one-world government, which will assuredly be a dictator. And so it's all designed by the grand design that's been in place for decades to make us compliant and to drive us in. But anyway, back to the issue that we were talking about how basically we've become indentured servants. The next thing was the passage of income tax, which again did not exist until 1933 when the Fed came into existence. And the income tax was basically put into place in order to give us the money to pay the Federal Reserve the interest on the national debt, the interest on the counterfeit money that they were printing. And folks, if you're out there and you're listening and you've got your income tax files, if you don't believe me, go and get your last income tax checks. And you made your income tax checks out to the Treasury Department. Now flip it over on the back, and you'll see that it was cashed by the Federal Reserve, not by the Treasury, because that money, 100%. Of every dollar that goes into income tax goes to the Federal Reserve. None of it goes to the public of the United States for roads or for maintenance or for schools or for any of the things that we need to run our government. It goes to private bankers, the Federal Reserve. And the law was illegal. It basically has never been a law that allowed a tax to be placed upon our labor, and there were six individual cases that the Supreme Court cited that said that the income tax law was illegal. They tried to pass the 16th Amendment, and they came back and said, nope, that 16th Amendment did not give the federal government the right to impose an income tax. So what the government did, they're really sneaky, they basically called it a voluntary tax. And I laughed when I read that, because basically here's how they did the end run around us again. When you take a job, and we all need jobs, or most of us do, you fill out your paperwork with HR, and they give you a 1040. And when you take that 1040, you are volunteering to pay taxes to the United States of America in the form of income tax, and that's how they've gotten around it. And what they did is they lost a number early on. They lost a number of lawsuits because of the six Supreme Court cases, and people who had not paid federal income tax were let go scot-free. And then they decided to go down to the lower courts, and they instructed the lower courts to no longer consider the Supreme Court. So here's a couple of lines from a lawsuit. And Irvin Swift was brought up on tax evasion. He was the first one to get this new policy imposed on him. He got 13 years. And in the proceedings in the case, the judge said, "You must follow the law as I give it to you. I will not allow the law in my courtroom." And then he went on several times to the lawyer to cite the Supreme Court rulings, and the judge says, "Irrelevant, denied, irrelevant, denied, irrelevant, denied." And Mr. Swift is spending 13 years in prison because he refused to pay a tax that was, in fact, illegal. And then that leads us to Social Security, which you were talking about. And what you said, Dolly, is right, but it's worse, because we need to, again, look at the nuances of it. And the Social Security was set up as a fund. And what a fund is by law supposed to do, it is money that is taken from a group of people for a specific purpose, to be put into a fund to draw interest and to have that money accrue for payments to be paid out for a specific purpose to recipients. And what happened is, at the time it was formed, there were 23 people paying in for every person who was receiving. And had we taken that money and put it into the fund and allowed the interest to accrue for all those years when we were so heavily in favor in terms of the number of recipients versus the number of contributors, we would not have a bankrupt Social Security Department. But what happened instead is, again, that money was never intended, just like income tax, never intended to be used for that purpose. It was a shill game. And basically what happened is every president that we've had in the last umpteen years has ultimately gone and taken money out of the Social Security to do what? To pay specifically all of the money they took went to pay interest on the national debt until the Social Security fund is effectively broke. And so basically that was another scam that they created on the American people, because that money was never treated as legally it was supposed to be, as a fund. And as a result, now Social Security is broke. And just as you said, Dolly, they've now positioned us to where Obama is in a position to try to close this thing and to drive us into bankruptcy.
Well, if people think that their wealth is concentrated in the top 2% now, wait till this happens, and you're going to find that there will be even a greater disparity in wealth. You're going to find that top 2% are going to be extremely wealthy, and no one else is going to have anything.
Oh, it's going to be, if you go back to what we started this conversation out with, I mean, if we have, in fact, as of 1933, become a democracy, a socialist communist society, well, a socialist communist society is a two-tier society, a society of the ultra-rich, those the people who are at the top, who make all the rules and and the ultra poor. And the real shame here, which we've talked about on the show before, is that as we moved from the farms to the cities, we became increasingly dependent on the government and on the corporations, so that we are dependent on them for our food, for our health care, for everything. So now Obama's come in, and every piece of legislation he's passing is basically making us increasingly more dependent on him. So now we're dependent on him for care, we're dependent on him for energy, and they basically have driven us into a situation where they think we can't and won't fight back when they try to collapse the government, because we're dependent. And what they've really done that we really need to understand is that they've divided us, and they've got, because of all the handouts, they've got all these people out there on the left who are in favor of the government, and who are waiting for their handouts. And when this thing collapses, just as you said, Dolly, there'll be the ultra-rich and the ultra-poor. And the very first thing that'll go is all the handouts, all the entitlement programs that we now have that are so significantly bankrupting us will be the very first things that go away. And
oh, yeah,
so
all the illegal immigrants that we're paying for all of their expenses. I mean, I like working to pay for illegal immigrant expenses so they can trash the border in Arizona so you can have mountains of trash. And then there are actually signs out there, do not enter this area. This is controlled by Mexican drug cartels. Hello, this is the United States. I mean, run their ass out of there.
Well, that's another one of the instances, like what Bush did with the bankruptcy laws. One of the things that they clearly stated early on is that if they were going to be successful in getting the control that they needed in order to collapse this country, they had to take the control away from the state. So originally, when our founding fathers set up this country and set up this government, the primary control was to be at the local level, at the state level, and systematically over the years, the federal government has taken all those controls that were supposed to be in the hands of the state, and they put them in the federal. So what has Obama been doing for the last 2 years that he's been in office? He's been opposing efforts by the states to clean up the borders. We're kind of talking about a different subject here, but again, it's all really part of positioning us because they really want to have a one-world government, and in this case, we're eventually going to see that border between Mexico and the United States go away. When this country collapses, we're going to be merged into a world government, and when that happens, that border between Mexico and the United States is going to go away, and all of that poverty that's down in Mexico is going to flood into the United States, and all of that violence is going to flood into the United States. And so there's another very huge reason why people need to wake up and stand up and start to do something before it's too late.
Well, Jen Brewer, she's trying so hard to keep those borders closed in Arizona. She's trying so hard to protect the people in Arizona. I know, I live there. You see them coming across the border with their backpacks. And you see them throwing the garbage down. And what used to be in Arizona, you bought California produce. They can't sell California produce now. The law won't allow them. They can't sell Arizona produce now. The law won't allow them. Arizona farmers are going belly up. I mean, so bad it looks like a manure field out there. What you have there are products of Mexico and Chile. You've got Mexican products in the supermarkets. And, of course, you have a lot of illegal aliens in the supermarkets. And what disgusts me, if they'll bring their kids in, they'll go into the supermarket, they'll pick up a package of donuts, a package of cookies. They'll eat out of the donuts, eat out of the cookies, and then they'll just throw them down when they go up to the checkout so they don't have to pay for them. Hello? What am I, just one big garbage dump and I'm here to serve you? And then people wonder why Arizona is prejudicing its illegal aliens. This is how they act. They say they take jobs that Americans don't want. That's bullshit, because they took over construction jobs. The construction company were subsidized by the government to hire construction workers. And you'd go by where they were constructing, you'd see big gaps in the foundation, and then they'd putty it up. Well, in a year, that foundation cracks, and those people have lost their home. And the police in this one particular city had definite instructions. You are not to pick up or arrest an illegal alien unless you catch them in the act of murder. Let them go.
Oh, yeah.
And those are instructions coming down by the federal government.
I have a question for both of you. I thought this was a half-hour show tonight. Are we still on the air, actually?
Yeah,
we
cleared that. We cleared that up. Yeah, we're good.
We're
for
back
as long
on
as we
Blog
need.
Talk Radio again now. That makes a difference.
So it's going to be an hour format.
Yeah. Back to what we were doing. Yeah, they.
It took Mike a while to
get
that.
That's great because I'll put together
the
material for half an hour.
I know it's confusing. The Blog Talk Radio was supposed to want to cut back to half an hour, which is why I moved to a conference call. Then now Blog Talk Radio, it's all technical stuff. We'll talk about it off the air. But yeah, everything's
good. Taking my car, going down there, and parking it behind this dimwit that's down there, and leaving it there. Except you probably would just back out and trash my car.
You can probably have them towed.
Pardon?
No, well, I think you have anger.
You
can
probably have them towed.
I called the manager's office. She's not available in the evening. Hello, then get her ass out of bed and bring her over here. Hard job.
When you come into your apartment complex, is there a sign that says, you know,
parking?
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. So whatever the number is to that tow truck company, call that number and tell them somebody's in your spot.
Oh,
don't come pick them up.
And I've called and they said, well, you're really paying this. This is a managed community. You're really paying that community. So if that community's property and you're paying them, you have to take it up with them. I said, well, I'll tell you what the hell I'll do. I'll just park two blocks down the street and walk home in the snow. You know, I was really pissed, and I'm still pissed, and I will raise hell in the morning. And the management in the office, they hate me. They absolutely hate me with a passion. I want two things. I want the building to be clean. I want a parking space. And if it's not, I'm on your ass all the time. I could be a real bitch. For the money I pay for this, they better take care of it. Well, that's my story. Now, I got to quit looking out the window. I keep getting pissed off. As my mother always said, better to be pissed off than pissed on. So I guess I can let that one fly. But, yes, in regard to Social Security, it's just a fund, just like the CIA is the covert action arm of the U.S. president to overthrow popularly elected governments. It will. That's the way it's always been. Okay, and Social Security has always been a slush fund. I mean, they had so many, wasn't Larry, IOUs under Nixon administration. He just threw them out, you know, and they no longer existed. I mean, we financed covert action wars through Social Security. We financed everything through that.
And it was never meant to take care of the people. It was like a pyramid scheme, basically.
Of course,
you know,
it was a Ponzi scheme, and they give Madoff hell. I mean, hello, they give Madoff hell, and it's a Ponzi scheme. What about all the presidents in this country that have been doing this, especially Obama? And it is a Ponzi scheme because a few people got paid off. A life expectancy was 59 years old, and you couldn't collect till you were 65. I tell you, when my time comes, if I'm dead, I'm going to bring my ass back here, and they're going to pay me. You know what? When I'm dead, they're paying me. Longevity runs in my family. I'm 708. Yeah, believe me, I'll wait till the cows come home, and we'll see what happens.
Well, unfortunately, Dolly, I don't know how to tell you this, but that plan's not going to work because within the next few years, this year is going to get very I don't know how to say this, and I can't prove this, folks, but every bit of research that I've done on this book and on my website tells me that we're getting to a point where the Obama administration is going to be used to collapse this. There was a quote that I have in my book that was just a few years ago, and it rings in my mind. It was from a German legislator, and he was saying at that time that the forces behind the then Bush administration, particularly citing the CFR, were moving and diligently to enforce a global dictatorship within the next 5 years. And so if that's true, and let's say he's got a little fudge room here, what it means is that sometime during the term of the Obama administration, we can see them creating crises that are going to facilitate them trying to drive us into a one-world government. So what I think I see happening in the next few months that I think people need to get ready for, if you haven't gone out and bought food, I think you need to go out and buy food. If you haven't got any water stored, I think you need to store some water. And by the way, there's
a little trick. You know that grocery stores only have a six-month supply of food?
Yeah, and most people...
Grocery stores only have a 6 weeks to a six-month supply of food.
Yeah, not 6 months. I used to work in a grocery trade.
So 6 weeks?
It's worse than that, Dolly, because basically, if the economy collapses, this is what's happened in every other country in the world when they collapse. When they collapse, the trucks stop rolling. And so it really doesn't matter if you're dealing with a large grocery chain that has a giant warehouse. That food's not going to get from that warehouse to that grocery store. So there'll be a run on the grocery store, and within a matter of 1 to 2 days, all of the shelves in those grocery stores will be emptied, and there'll be no food. And we'll have a period of time where they're doing whatever magic they're going to do another reorganization, just like they did in 1933, trying to drive us into a one-world government, and for maybe a month or 2 months or 3 months, trucks aren't going to roll, people aren't going to go to work, the society is going to go into absolute chaos, and if you don't have at least a three-month supply of food in your home and a supply of water, you're going to be in trouble, because there's entirely a likelihood that during that period of time we won't even have water and utilities, because if people aren't going to work, then the utility companies aren't running, and basically we're going to be in a situation of absolute chaos if that occurs. So people need to be putting food together. They need to be storing water, and if you store water, you want to put about a teaspoonful of bleach in each gallon that you store, so that it it doesn't get bacteria in it. It leaves a little bit of a taste, but it makes sure that it has the necessary shelf life that you need. And I know a lot of people are out there buying gold, and that's great. But given what we've been talking about tonight, I think we could expect that there's a reasonable possibility that the government is going to once again call our gold in. So one of the things that I talk about in my first book is that, as far as I've been able to ascertain in my research, there's never been a time when the coins were called in. What we can expect is, as they collapse, there'll be a new paper currency, and they'll back it by something, our labor, if is more than likely indenturing us in some fashion or other, making us slaves. But basically, there's only 3% of the currency of the world that's even out as paper right now, because most of the transactions are electronic. So you can imagine, if there's only 3% of our currency that is floating around in paper, it's an infinitesimally small amount that's floating around in change. And coins cost 3, 4, 5 times more to mint than their face value. So what happens is, historically, they've never bothered to call the coins in. So just a little insurance policy that the listeners out there might take note of. One of the things that I said in my first book you can do is just start saving your change every night. Put it in a jar. Maybe you get, let's say, $1,000 worth of just regular coins, not pre-1964 silver coins, just regular coins. And let's just create a little hypothetical story here. Let's say that the currency, when they pull the currency we have and they issue a new currency, let's say it's 10 to 1. It'll probably be much greater than that. But let's say it's 10 to 1. If you had $10,000, that means that now your new currency is $1,000. Well, the converse of that is that you have $1,000 in coins, and those coins kept the same face value, so a 25-cent piece still said 25 cents on it. That means that it went up in value 10 times, or your paper money went down in value. So in order to hedge the period of time in which we have a chaotic situation, in order to be able to buy something, it's not a bad idea not only to have gold or to have free 1964 silver, but it's also a really good, cheap, inexpensive hedge for the people who don't have a lot of money, just to save their coins and put them in a jar, because in all likelihood they'll be able to be used when we have a collapse, which is, I think, almost certainly going to happen sometime in 2011.
Wow. This is something we all need to know, and I've heard this from there are other very reliable people. You know, they always start stocking water, start stocking food, you know. My goal this year is to secure a cabin in the Ozarks. You know what I mean? Where you can literally live without the utilities. You know?
Well, I mean, that's the ultimate. Anybody who can do that should be getting off the grid. But unfortunately, we've become a nation of city dwellers, and it used to be that 99% of the population lived in the farms, and now it's just about the exact opposite. About 1 or 2% of the population are on farms, and the other 98% of us are in cities. So for most of us, that's impractical. We just don't have the money and the wherewithal to go out and become totally
self-sufficient. Well, it's not practical for me now either, but that's a goal. Of course it's not practical for me. For one thing, you got to have the money to go, and you got to have the money to buy it. But that's my goal, you know. That's... besides that, that's where I like to be, you know. So that's my goal. So we'll see what happens. I'll probably just be in this apartment bitching about nowhere to park. So probably if there's no money, they'll kick your butt out. We'll let you stay there. I'll be moving in with my kids, so they're going to love that.
Yeah, that's another thing. If you're talking about stocking up on food for 3 months, you better be able to plan to pay your rent up for 3 months or your mortgage.
That makes a lot of sense.
Not as actually not as important, because when you have an When you have an absolute economic collapse and you have a shift over, everything's going to freeze. Basically, the money's going to be worthless, absolutely worthless. And for a period of time, you know, everything will just come to a grinding halt. We'll be back to a barter society for a period of time where the banks won't be out there collecting the mortgage payments because basically society's not going to be moving. The trucks aren't going to be moving. Nothing's going to be working. We'll be basically living on subsistence. And what we need to have is food and water.
What concerns me are older people that really do live on government Social Security. You know, what is going to happen to them? That really concerns me. Older people that live on security and live in subsidized housing is like, no, don't go into that subsidized housing. That's not a good idea. Well, yes, but it's less expensive. I can save money. No, you're going to go ahead and just spend more money is what's going to happen. So what's going to happen to all these people? You know, it's very serious.
Well, actually, it's again, far worse, and I really sort of hate to bring out the ultimate end game, but maybe we should talk about it for a second. You've got people within the Obama administration who are praising Mao, and you've got people within the CFR that are praising Mao. Rockefeller says that Mao's grand experiment in China was the greatest social experiment in history and overwhelming, astounding success. And here's what I want to point out, is it led to the intentional starvation of 67 million Chinese. And he said he was prepared to lose up to half of the Chinese population, which at that time would have been 300 million people, in order to realize his dream. So here's what I guess, you know, I really need to say to really, really get people, you know, to a point where they understand what's going on. The whole cap and trade issue is a smokescreen. It's a smokescreen for a very real, real issue that the government is using cap and trade to basically tell us we have a carbon issue, but in reality we don't. The scientific facts are that even if we were able to somehow miraculously abstain from man-made carbon, it's going to have absolutely no impact on what's going on. The scientific facts are that we're going through a really, relatively long cycle where we have major sunspot activity, and that's what's causing the temperature to fluctuate and giving the government the basis to try to use that in order to drive cap and trade. But what's really behind that is something far more sinister. The forces that are trying to create this one-world government can consider natural resources of the world to be theirs. So this is about controlling oil and about controlling the natural resources of the world. And it's basically the bottom line, going back to Mao and to communism, is that it took 10,000 generations to take the world's population up to 2 billion. At some points it was down as low as a half a billion people worldwide. And then in one generation, with modern health care, we've gone to a population of almost 7 billion now, and it's expected that within the next 20 years we'll be to approximately 9 billion if we don't do something. So in my book and on my website, I have numerous quotes from government think tank agencies that call themselves, quote, the riders of the pale horse, and that say that the UN, for example, says they have a goal of seeing to it that 350,000 people a day die. And there's another quote in the book that talks about a minimum of one quarter of the population of the world must be extinguished. And when you get to the more, you know, really sinister quotes in there, it basically says that they need to get the population of the world back down to 1 billion to 1.5 billion. That's what they consider to be a sustainable level. So when we have given everything over to the government, we now live in cities and we're dependent on farmers to produce, and they're dependent on oil, we're in a position where we are so vulnerable to being starved to death that it's unbelievable. And once this worldwide dictatorship goes into play, then we better get our Bibles out and we better start reading the book of Revelation, because at that point they're going to use war, they're going to use famine, and they're going to use starvation in order to systematically do what Stalin did. 45 million people died, Mao, 67 million people died, and when you're dealing with communism, which is what we're basically moving into, a socialist communist dictatorship, you better believe that we're going to see mass purges of unbelievable proportions. So it's not a simple matter of the poor person who's dependent on the government for Social Security or who's living in housing that's subsidized by the government. It's a matter of, are you a segment of the society that the government is going to deem expendable? If you're over 65, you're expendable. If you're vocal against the government, you're expendable. If you're young and have a health problem, you're expendable. The group that history has shown that they will allow to live, to serve them, are the people primarily from the age of 20 to 40 that are in their prime, that are able to work and that have education, and even educated people oftentimes are expunged because educated people sometimes are considered to be dangerous. So the communists burned the books, Hitler burned the books, Stalin burned the books, and now we've got net neutrality and a move against the Internet in order to basically isolate the American people and take away our ability to communicate with each other. So basically that's the real, real end game here, and I didn't intend to get into that topic tonight, but as we're really talking about, you know, the truth and what's really, really going to befall us and getting ready for it, you know, that's what's going to be happening in the long run. And so I would encourage people, you know, we just can't let them drive us to use crisis to drive us into accepting
that
one world government. Pardon me?
We can't allow that to happen. People need to educate themselves. They need to listen. They need to learn. They need to be informed. They need to take public action. They need to keep on our government figures. I mean, the president, Congress, and the Senate, they are servants of the people. The people are not their servants, and you need to treat the president as what he is. He is your servant. Make him act appropriately. Congress is your servant. Make them act appropriately.
Here's what it's going to come down to at some point. I'll use a biology example. The financial elite, I'll use two examples. I've talked about this on the show before, but the financial elite, there's a Leak City memo where the 1% have more money than the 95% of the population below them. And what they're afraid of is that some point in time we'll wake up and we'll see that and we'll want a fairer distribution. So at some point, if we can get some control of the government, in my book I talk about how we can redistribute that wealth more equitably, not from the middle class to the lower class, but from the ultra-rich bankers to the people, just by changing the laws and putting back in place the things that were there before. But that's really, you know, that's if we can get control. Before we face that problem, we've got other problems to face that are a more fundamental issue. And here's what it really comes down to. This is the warning that I would give people. They want to make us revolt and spill out into the streets, and they want us to turn to violence. And when they do, they have now, in my book, I have quotes from a half a dozen people saying that they have passed all of the laws that they need to pass in order to legally impose martial law upon the American people. They have internment camps set up, and then if you go to my site, I have some ads posted where they were about 6 months ago advertising for internment guards, and I read those ads and I expected them to say, well, in the instance of a national emergency, another Katrina or whatever, that the people would humanitarianly be put up in these sites for a period of time and guards would facilitate their transition back into society. But that's not what the ad said. The ad said to guard prisoners. And so they've set up and Obama, if you look at what happens every single solitary time a communist regime is set up, they have to have exactly the opposite of what our founding fathers said. They have to have a standing army. And so Hitler basically put his brown shirts in, and he had his Gestapo, and he had his standing army in order to force compliance on the people. And here's something that I bet very few Americans know. In that stimulus package that was passed, there were all kinds of terrible things in there that our legislators never read. One that we've talked about on the show before was that they hijacked the education system by having the federal government take over the student loan program. But listen to this, folks. When Obama was campaigning, he was telling the American people that we needed to have a homeland security force as strong as our military, and he wanted a million-man army reporting directly to him, embedded in the stimulus program was everything he needed in order to make that a reality. And so they've put into place everything they need to put into place in order to impose martial law. So here's the bottom line. All they're going to wait for is to create a crisis and to have the American people spill out into the streets in revolt and in violence. And when they do, they'll impose martial law. And it'll be just like what happened in Nazi Germany. In this country, if martial law is declared, the Congress and the Senate cannot challenge that for 6 months. And the president essentially has dictatorial power for a six-month period. Nazi Germany never came out of the situation that was similar to that in Germany, and just like here, will not come out. So here's what the American people need to do. We need to basically resolve to pull together, to not be fractionalized, to not have it be the Hispanics versus the Caucasians, the liberals versus the conservatives, the Democrats versus the Republicans, the Americans fighting for our very existence. And what we have to do is recognize, here's the biology example, is that government is a parasite. And the money that they live off of is our money. It's our hard work. It's our labor. It's our money, and we willingly give it to them. So at some point when this whole thing starts to decay, what we have to do is not spill out into the streets. We just have to basically stand up by the millions and refuse to participate in the process. If we're going to have labor strikes and we're not going to go to work and we're basically going to revolt against the government but do it in peaceful fashion, then that's the most powerful weapon we can have against the government because they're a parasite and they need us as much or more than we need them, but they have us leading, but we need them. Say that again, Dolly.
I hate to tell you I have to go, but I do have to go.
Oh,
and right now I still have to work for a living, so I do have to go. I mean, I work off my computer, but I still got to do it. And I've got to edit that equine art. So I want that cabin in the Ozarks. I got to sell more artwork. I am gonna have to.
Donnie, really quick before you go, what do we got? Who do we got coming up next week?
We haven't heard from Cass in a while. He was busy during the holidays, and I knew that. The first Tuesday of every month, Reverend Reif has another commitment, so he'll be back on Tuesday. I believe Kath will be back on Thursday, and we hope Larry will be back on Friday. And I want to try and get a circuit together, and I've kind of been working on that, and hopefully this week I have time to work on it. Or I have Larry with him, Reverend Reif with cultural theology, and then I have another speaker, an individual who is a retired university professor, and he uses science to prove the existence of God. So I think if we can get these three guys together on one circuit, on one bill, we can achieve a lot.
That sounds awesome.
Great.
Doesn't it? So I'm going to be working on that this weekend. And I have some university connections that are around on the weekend. And fortunately, I work off my computer, so I'm able to, in the daytime, work back and forth on both areas. And now I am going to have to go and take care of some of my business. It's been extremely interesting tonight. It's good to get back. I was busy during the holidays, as I'm sure a lot of people were, you know, and those things happen. And then, like I told you, Mike, I had several eye appointments. No surgery. I picked that in the past. So I'm glad my eyes were getting – I should be able to wear eye makeup again, so look at world, here I come, watch for me.
I've noticed we're off the air, so I'm going to let you guys go, and I'll see you, I guess it's 6 o'clock on Friday now, right?
Okay, 6 o'clock on Friday. I'll see you on
regular format. So,
And Larry, call in on 6 o'clock on Tuesday if you can with Reverend Reif.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, talk to you both.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks a lot, Dolly. Thanks a lot, Larry. All right, everybody, that's our show for tonight. That was our co-host, Dolly Miller Brennan, and the author, Larry Ballard, author of Modern Slavery and the Fight for Freedom, available on Amazon.com, as well as his website, LibertyCrusade.com. All right, everybody, hope your holidays are great, and I hope everybody has a great year. This is MJH. Peace, God bless. I'm out of here. Later.